Hey, Jen, are you there? Well, folks, it's 2 o'clock, so I'm going to begin the webinar. I would just like to have a sense if anybody's out there. Yeah, so if you're out there, I'm opening up the chat. Please give me a little type. Give me a little sense that I'm speaking to someone. Yay! So if you're out there, say hi. Nobody's muted. Everybody's unmuted. So as you come on the call, I'm hoping you'll let me know you have arrived. And I believe this is being recorded. What is this? Hold meeting. Show hide Q&A. Q&A mode mutes the conference and allows you to select participants and ask questions. No, we're not doing that. I know Lauren's going to come shortly. We're going to have a couple more people here, and then I'll start the show, as it were. Well, that's good. I guess I'm unmuted. I'm screen sharing. Pause screen sharing. Stop screen sharing. No. Well, Jen, unless you have the speak, unless you're able to speak into a microphone on your computer, can you say something? First off, let me know if you can hear me.
Jen.
Hey, there she is. How you doing, girl?
Good, how are you?
Oh, it's so nice not to be alone. All right, so it works. You don't have to be.
Was a little bit confused at first, but then I realized I needed to just hit my
Yeah.
button. So
You needed to just get your what?
I needed to hit a button.
Oh, my goodness. What button did you hit just so I can share this with others if
It was a
there's no.
little audio button, and it looks like a telephone.
Yeah, the telephone. Yeah.
Yeah, so then it asked me if I wanted to use my speakers or if I wanted to call in, and I said use my speakers.
Oh, okay.
So I'm probably going to mute myself so that you can do your thing, but.
Okay, well, you can do that, sure. And I should be able to tell. I'm going to wait another minute to see if somebody else comes on, if that's okay.
Yeah.
And then I'll just run through it, as it were. So far, it's just you and me, so I'm just going to wait a minute, and then I shall perform for you.
I love
If no one else comes, which I hope they do. But we'll see. I do know there's someone who said they were going to be a little late, so. But it's really cool that you showed up. I really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome. I thought, why not? Like, it's good to see like what other people are doing and kind of get a feel for it, and yeah.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely, that's what I say, you know? And so you just saw it pop up on the Facebook page and decided to jump on because I don't remember you.
I did. Can you hold on one second? I'm
Yeah.
actually getting a phone call.
Sure.
Okay, yeah. So
Are you
I did,
seeing? Yeah.
I did just see it when you posted it, and I was like, why not? So
Well, God bless you. All right. Well, you know what? I'm just going to start, and then what was that? Oh, I don't know. And then folks will join me, or they won't. Feel free to mute yourself or not mute yourself. If you wanna, if you do, you see the chat thing? Are you able to see the chat screen?
I did see the little chat thing, because I did see
Yeah,
that,
and
yep.
just so this is an opportunity for me to ask too. Do you am I, I'm screen sharing right now. Do you see what's up on the screen?
I do.
Oh, all of that's just wonderful. Okay, and I think we have someone else, an FCC viewer, who just joined the call. Can you introduce yourself? I don't know who you are, FCC viewer. I don't know. You can chat or. I don't even know what that means. It sounds like somebody who's making sure we don't say anything dirty or something. FCC. Doesn't it sound like an official organization, Jen?
It does a little bit, but
I
I'm sure
know.
it's harmless.
I know. Well, I'm not going to worry about it. Welcome, FCC. We're going to jump in now without further ado. And if I need to, I'll mute people. Otherwise, you know, I'm going to leave people unmuted because it's just a few of us. So today I'm talking, I really appreciate you all showing up. This is a webinar for the creative entrepreneur. And when I say creative entrepreneur, what I mean, I'm just playing with bells and whistles here. What I mean is anybody who you can, you know, you could play an instrument, you could be a filmmaker, you could be a digital programmer, artists in the traditional sense, anybody who wants to make a living doing something they create is a creative entrepreneur. And the old word for that used to be artist. I guess artists, well, there still are artists, and some people think that the idea of creative entrepreneur dilutes the sacredness of the term artist, but I don't think so. I think it's just an evolution in the culture. And so I will be using the term artist and creative entrepreneur interchangeably. And the focus here today is how to be happy without losing your creative edge, because there's a lot of mythology about being a creative professional. Lauren just joined the call. Hi, Lauren.
Hi there.
Yay. I'm not muting people because there's so few of us. But so I was just saying this presentation is a webinar for artists who want to be happy without losing their creative edge. Artists also known as creative entrepreneurs. So first off, I'm very curious to know whether or not you consider yourself an artist. I believe that a lot of people on the call or who are listening to this work for themselves, are creating their own career outside of the standard corporate, you know, job model. And a question that I think a lot of people react to, this is the question. So how's the career going? Somebody sees you and they ask, how's the career going? And I'd just be curious to hear, if you want to shout out or type in the chat, what do you feel when somebody asks that question? What feelings come up? I feel like a deer in the headlights when somebody asks me that.
Yeah, that's accurate.
and I guess a deer in the headlight is in, and I'm not sure why there's a certain defensiveness or almost like, oh, you caught me. I always feel like I'm about to be exposed in some way when someone asks me that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and what about you, Jen? Jen is a colleague of mine from the Money Club. By the way, Lauren is a very dear friend of mine. Lauren, meet Jen. Jen, meet Lauren.
Hi, Jen.
Okay. I wrote in the chat.
You did? What the hell? And so what is it? It's confusion, shame, brava. Yes. Well, you're in the right place. That's right. I have to remember to look at the chat. That's one of the things, doing a webinar for the first time, this is a real learning curve for me. Looking at the chat, that helps. If I don't expect participation, I won't look for it. So the big question is, the million question is, what if you didn't feel like a fraud or a failure when anybody asked that question? Confusion and shame to me kind of indicate a feeling of not being for real, right? Would you agree?
Yeah.
You would? Yeah. So what would that be like if you didn't feel like a fraud or failure when friends or family asked? So how's the career going? And what I'm hoping to do in this webinar is arrive at some answers to that question and perhaps even convey some information that will help us get there, get to that place of feeling comfortable in our own skin when someone asks, so how's your career going? And I have a lot of information, and if there were folks here who were on the webinar who were new to me, I would say not to worry, because even though this is a large topic, you don't have to worry anyway, you two ladies, but this is a large topic, and for folks who come in on the call who are interested, I'm going to offer some one-on-one time with me to get into the particulars of their individual situation to look at what their challenges are. Okay, so that's me seeding the pitch right there, Lauren, just so you know. But to carry on, let me carry on from there. We'll continue into the subject matter at hand. I want to talk a little bit about who I am. Yes, look at that picture. I'm an actress. This is me as a young actress. And this is the start of my career. And I'm just curious, if anybody recognizes anybody, I'm giving you a big hint, in this picture.
Absolutely.
What about you, Jen? You recognize anybody in this picture?
Yeah.
Yes. Well,
you mean
so,
other than you?
Yes, other than me.
Yeah.
And this picture, this set the stage for the major complexes that plagued me throughout my theatrical career. The fact that I was sharing the stage and yet off to the sidelines with this formidable individual.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this, when I say complex, this is what I'm talking about. And I didn't realize there's actually a name for it. You know, Elena in the Money Club, she taught me about the Segovia complex, Segovia being a great classical guitar player. And so the expression is, if I can't be Segovia, I'm not going to play at all. And, you know, for me as a young actress, instead of just learning from her, from Ms. Treep, I just figured because I'm sharing the stage with her, cosmically speaking, somehow that must mean ultimately I need to be her. I need to have her career in some messed up way. And if I don't, if I'm not Meryl Streep, then I may as well not bother, right? And I think culturally, there's a lot of that. If you make it, it means you are recognized as an actor. You know, if you're recognized, that's proof of your worth and your greatness. And the reason I turned back to this slide is because I don't imagine you recognize this woman. Does anybody recognize this actress? Either of you?
No.
This actress is the great but heretofore unknown Marcel Rosenblatt. Now, I think the name was also weighing her down, I'm afraid, you know, just given the, the underlying anti-Semitic undertow of the showbiz industry. But the reason I'm pointing Marcel out is because Meryl looked up to her.
Uh-huh.
Years later on Charlie Rose, Meryl was talking about an actress who she considered a major influence, and that actress was Marcel Rosenblatt, who you've never heard of.
Right.
But Meryl Streep looked up to her and quoted her, aspired to her. This woman is a phenomenally talented actress who you've never heard of. So So the Segovia, the Segovia problem, that's a problem. The Segovia problem is troublesome because if you're measuring your worth as an artist by someone else's fame, you're really comparing apples to oranges. It really has nothing to do with what you're actually going for. And there's another thing, a way to identify, I think, that you're suffering from Segovia complex, for a lot of artists anyway. If you find yourself putting it off, if you find yourself wanting to try something creatively and you're just not doing it, or you're always talking about the great book you're going to write, or the play you're going to, you know, that you're going to write. Procrastination is perfectionism in disguise. It's just another, I think it's another iteration of Segovia complex. If I don't do it perfectly, it's not worth doing. Mm-hmm. So, if you're not going to get bogged down in the Segovia complex, why be an artist? Why be a creative entrepreneur at all? Why make art, in other words? And in my training as a creativity coach, it became clear to me that what we do as artists is we make meaning. You may ask, what is that? What is that? What does that mean, we make meaning? Whether you're a performing artist or a writer or an interpretive artist, which I think is what an actor is, any kind of artist, you're making a kind of meaning. Meaning being anything that has value to you or anything that you perceive as having value to someone else. It may be valuable to inspire or uplift another person. That has value. Value is subjective. So, in terms of the artist, without meaning, you're left with why bother? As an artist, we're constantly making meaning. And without meaning, we're left with why bother? And the challenge of being something like a performing artist or an actor in particular is you're waiting, oftentimes, you're waiting for people to give you permission to make meaning. You're waiting for someone to give you permission to make art. So when you're not making art, who are you? Later on, in a little while, I'm going to be talking about the three major elements that I consider the enemy, the artist's enemy, the creative entrepreneur's enemy. And they creep up on us, these three elements that I'm going to present shortly, when we are not making art. When you're immersed in doing what you love, time ceases to exist. You are on purpose. You are on point. There's just flow when you're doing your work. When you're not, very often, we don't know what to do with ourselves, okay? And as an actress, I know for myself, I had no sense of who I was as a human being outside of the art, outside of being an actor. I was an actor. That's who I was. And that was a problem. It became so much of a problem. I had my heart broken so many times, and I had so little sense of myself as a person that, as Lauren, you may remember, Lauren is my partner in crime in many ways, Jen, but that's a whole nother story. At a certain point, I hit the existential wall. I realized I wasn't going to be Meryl Streep. And if I wasn't going to be a Meryl Streep, then why bother? And it was at that point that I realized I needed some kind of spiritual grounding, and I ran away and joined the Hindu kibbutz. I became a nun. I joined the nunnery. And doing this probably saved my life. Moving into this ashram and wearing this sari and being part of this community and finding a way to reparent myself as a person, letting go of the identity of the actress, probably saved my life. And I'm being very literal when I say that. Because as an artist, you know, artists are, this is a true statistic. Being an artist is one of the top 10 professions with the highest rate of depression. And I think it's because depression is the result of a lack of meaning. Depression is an existential crisis, a lack of purpose. And there are so many times when we're creating, when we don't have, you know, as creative entrepreneurs, and we're left to our own devices, when we're not able to make meaning or other things intervene, it is very easy to lose your raison d'etre, your reason for existence, and ergo, depression. And now we arrive at the three elements, the three enemies I was talking about that plague the creative entrepreneur, the artist, and they are irregular income, irregular hours, and isolation. Hopefully, I'm going to talk a little bit about and give you some ways to deal with those three demons. Irregular income, of course, if you're relying heavily on your work as a creative entrepreneur and you're not making your baseline yet, that, you know, how much you work is reflected in how well you live. And the trouble with the myth of the starving artist is that you cannot make art and starve at the same time. That's kind of why it's bullshit. Irregular hours, that just affects, you know, a lot of actors don't feel like they have a right to a schedule. They have to, and they don't feel like they have a right to any kind of security. A lot of performers feel, I don't want to get locked into a job, you know. I have to remain flexible. And remaining flexible in and of itself becomes a trap in a way, because you can't create any foundation for yourself. And lastly, the wonderful thing about being a creative entrepreneur is it's freedom. For me, freedom is very important. But along with freedom comes the fact that nobody cares whether you get out of bed in the morning, right? If you don't show up at a job, you're going to get fired. If you work for yourself, right? If you work for yourself, nobody's going to fire you, but then again, nobody's there to notice if you don't show up. And it's very easy to disappear into your head, which is a very dangerous neighborhood, and just end up very alone. And isolation is probably the biggest enemy of success that there is. So here's the big irony. Artists are so afraid of getting locked in to a situation that won't allow them to make their art. But paradox, you know, the paradox is that artists thrive in structure. Artists thrive in some kind of structure, something that holds them. I just have this little contradiction under here, because you know that wonderful ad for Game of Thrones, I think a couple seasons ago, with Littlefinger's quote, chaos is a ladder. Well, chaos is a pit. It is a pit. No, chaos is not a pit. No, yes, it is. Chaos is a pit. It is not a ladder. Chaos leads to isolation. So, ergo, this saved my life because I needed to find connection. This is how I found it back in the early 80s, by joining this spiritual community. Trouble was, I was still an actor. I went over here to find myself. But, you know that feeling you're never in the right place? Wherever you are, you should be somewhere else. That's how this was. As an actor, I felt like I was missing something. I moved into this spiritual community, and I felt like I was missing something. I was missing the actress. And that ambivalence, those counterintentions, were just ripping me apart. And eventually, well, I'll go back to this in a moment. Eventually, I left the ashram. I got what I needed, and I left. And the big takeaway for me from living here, though, was what I just spoiled, which is company is stronger than will. I realized that if I'm going to come back into the world and be an artist of any kind, I cannot do it alone. You can't do it. You just can't do anything alone. Because willpower, I think willpower is really an urban legend, quite frankly, really. The way you create willpower is by creating support, because company is stronger than will. I remember when I was living in the ashram, I managed to stay on a macrobiotic diet. I was living so healthily because everybody else was. Of course, I moved back to the city and that all went to shit because company is stronger than will. So, Lauren, you probably recognize this book.
Yeah.
Jen, this is a great resource. Barbara Scher's Wishcraft. I consider her to be seminal in the coaching profession. People talk about Thomas Leonard as being the father of coaching. I consider Barbara Scher the mother of coaching, and this was her first book. This is an early edition of Wishcraft, How to Get What You Really Want. And what's very integral to her system, besides having a very specific methodology, is creating support teams around whatever it is you're trying to do. And it was really the beginning of my becoming a coach, because I started creating support teams. As a matter of fact, Lauren, I'm honored you're on the call, because Lauren was in, I think, the very first support team. She and I formed this together. And yeah. Out of this group, as you may recall, Lauren, I started a yoga practice, so I was able to support myself. Another woman ended up moving up to Maine and becoming a professional DJ. Lauren ended up opening a bookstore, right?
Yeah.
Yes. What were you going to say, Lauren?
I said, where you often taught yoga. At the bookstore.
That's right. Oh, my God, that's right. I actually, that was my venue. Lauren opened the bookstore, and then I started teaching yoga there early in the morning. So this became my modus operandi. I realized this was my source. Company was my source of resilience. And eventually, one of the things I did was become a stand-up comedian, because back in the late 80s, this was the rock and roll of the late 80s. This was, if you couldn't sing, I mean, or if you couldn't, like, really sing, this was a way to break in, as it were, to show business. So I was an actor who became a stand-up comic. I think the theory worked best for stand-up comics who wanted to break into acting, the ones who really succeeded this in this route. They really started out as comedians. But I became a comedian by creating another support system based out of this book, The Artist Way, another wonderful resource, Spiritual Path to Higher Creativity by Julia Cameron. Take a screenshot of that if you like. And I went through this book three times, and I created a writer's group so that I was coming up with material. I also credit the processes in this book with my becoming a playwright, because frankly, doing comedy was limiting to me. I didn't always feel like being funny. So I started to write. I wrote a one-woman show, and eventually I started writing plays with other people in them, as you can see. In other words, my creativity was finally grounded in something. So we have two things so far. Okay, it was grounded in making meaning. I was making the meaning I wanted to make. It wasn't about Meryl Streep anymore. Meryl can live her life. She was living her life. You know, what I did was none of her business, and vice versa. What she does is none of my business. I have nothing to do with her. She's just minding her own business, is basically what I'm saying. And I had to come to a place where that was enough for me, where making meaning was enough for me. And that's how writing and acting really started to mesh for me. And I started to write for other people. Eventually, I wrote a full-length play. And this is where I hit another wall. And I'm going to be getting into more, hopefully more content here that you can really draw from. This was a very successful play. It was it got reviewed positively in the New York Times. It was numbered in Backstage, which is the show business industry newspaper, one of the industry newspapers. It was counted as one of the best plays of 2004. It got incredible reviews. And after it closed, for reasons I won't go into, I went into a suicidal depression. I went into a major, major meaning crisis. And this caused me to reexamine and reinvent myself again. I had to really look at where I was coming from. And what I realized was I was functioning out of these three beliefs that I think a lot of artists, a lot of creative entrepreneurs have in common. One, I work best when I'm depressed or high or living on the edge. So being happy, doing whatever it took to be happy, taking antidepressants, for instance, I believe that would kill my creativity. The second was, I felt that if I got trapped in a job, had some sense of security, I would just stop making art. And the three was this either or, and this really fueled number one. This belief, this internal conflict that I could not have a family and be an artist. You could say you can't have a family or be an actor. You can't have a family or be a writer. You can't have a family. I didn't believe I could have normalcy and be a creative person and be an artist. Because if I were to have a family, if I were to be normal, it would mean I didn't have the luxury of depression anymore. And so much of my great work came out of that. That's why there's so many alcoholic writers. The flip side, though, is that Jackson Pollock created his best work while he was sober. And what put an end to his career was starting to drink again. He died. Long story short. Right? You think about Meryl Streep. She raised four children. This is not a woman you see in the tabloids. She is a very grounded person. I had to really look at those beliefs. And as I was getting adept at creating support groups for myself and finding I had a gift for supporting other people, to the point where my husband eventually said, "You're good at this. You should start charging." And I realized, well, that's not a bad idea because I'm really burnt out on restaurant hostessing and cater waitering. Was that these beliefs, these underlying beliefs were killing me. I had a choice. And I mean quite literally a choice. I could go on, which meant I had to change my thinking, or I would die. And I'm not exaggerating at all here. My life had to be about something more than being an artist. And my art had to be about something more than my pain. So we go back to artists make meaning. I think that the romance of being in pain is that when we're depressed, when we feel intensely, we are very close to what matters. We feel very close to what matters to us. And it makes it easier to write out of that or to act out of that. And so to drop into the work, you have to learn how to be in touch with what matters, with what is meaningful, right? And it doesn't have to come from pain. And when I work with people, it's a highly individualized process. Finding the way that an individual is going to drop into the work for themselves is not going to be the same one person to the next. For some people, it may mean getting up first thing in the morning and writing, just free associative writing, every day. For someone else, it may mean showing up in the studio at a certain time every week, a certain number of times a week, and listening to a particular piece of music that moves them, that connects on an emotional level. So I would invite you right now to think of something that means something to you. It could be a TED Talk by somebody. It could be a piece of literature. It could be a piece of music. I think music is powerful. It affects you on a cellular level. I mean, if I'm really stuck, I put on Gloria Gaynor's I Will Survive. And that does it for me. It gets me out. If I have to do something, deadlines are also a good way to drop into the work. You know, having to do something. You don't have to rely on pain. Okay. So I came up with this little exercise here. It may seem like a bit of a non sequitur, but it's pretty hard to create meaning as a person or an artist if you don't know what your values are, if you don't know what matters to you. So maybe it would be fun to go to the chat right now and just start typing in. You take a screenshot of this and do this for yourself later, but I think it would be fun right now to just start typing in some qualities or things that make your life worth living. And I'll start off, for instance, for me, freedom. Helping others. What else is important? So there must be something important to you. Type something. Joy. I love it. Yes, joy. What else? What else matters?
Trying to find my way.
Yeah. What else matters? My son. He matters. My son's happiness. That matters. I can't see all of the texting. I don't pull it out. Loving, big time. I second that. Loving. Now, if you were to do this exercise, what I would recommend is that you do this part first. Write down the top five qualities or things that make life worth living. And then take 5 minutes, take 10 minutes, take an hour if you like. Review those qualities. For instance, let's take loving. What are five ways? Well, this I put down three. I'm going easy on everybody. What are three ways that that quality shows up in your life? Like, I'm going to just start typing for me how that shows up in my life. My marriage. My work. Being a mom. Being a daughter. There's a lot of them. We could go on and on, right? Oh yeah, being a wife. Yeah, I forgot about that one. Okay, so this is a great exercise. If you come up with those five values, go through each one and write down three ways that they show up in your life, all right? And this is interesting, three ways that they don't always show up in your life. If you can't come up with that, then you're in good shape. All right. For me, freedom. Freedom is an issue, right? Freedom isn't showing up all over my life. Not yet. Okay. Freedom, I don't have the freedom yet to just act. You know, I might want to just act one day or make, I don't have the freedom to just write. Just be a playwright. Okay, that freedom's not there. Fortunately, I do have the freedom to do something I love, however, that integrates all the things I'm good at. And that's what I'm doing right now. There's a little performance involved. There's been some writing involved. I've been helping people, so there's some loving involved. I get to make my own hours, so, you know, there's a lot here that reflects my values. So this is a very powerful assessment to do for yourself. How are your values showing up in your life? And that is the first step to structuring the kind of life you want. All right. So what if this is the big go-to thing about being a coach and what it is I think I can do for people. What if you could be at the height of your creative powers without having to sacrifice your relationships? You could be happily married. You could be having a family. And you could still be a poignant, moving writer. What if you could enjoy the refuge of a safe, attractive, organized living environment that's conducive to rest and contemplation and creation in the midst of a thriving career? If you had the balance in your life where you could give yourself an environment that supports what it is that you want to be doing. What if you didn't feel like a fraud or a failure whenever friends or family ask, so how is your career going? How do you get there? Well, that's really what I do. It starts with a conversation. I invite you to schedule a free discovery session with me, and you ladies can do it anytime you like. I won't even pitch you. I won't even pitch because you're my good friends. If I were to be doing this to folks who I didn't know, and I don't know, there may be someone lurking about out there, if you care to, I would be happy to schedule a half-hour consultation and talk about what it is that will help you create the structure within you, within which you can thrive as a creative professional, as an entrepreneur. And if you are on the call, you can text me right now, or chat right into the chat here, okay, and let me know with your phone number, and I will call you afterwards, and we will schedule a time to do this. You can also just take down my information and get in touch with me. Subscribe to my newsletter if you haven't already. I also do podcasts, which can be a nice thing to drop into for inspiration from time to time, and here's the information for that, to find content on the web that you may find supportive and inspiring. So we have reached the end of the webinar, and at this point I'd be very curious to hear any takeaways either of you may have had. Feel free to type them, speak them, what worked for you. Yeah, let's do that. What worked for you?
I think it was great.
Why, thank you, Jen. Why do you think it was great?
I really like your format. I like how educational it was. I like how you moved naturally through explaining what the problem was, and then I really loved the willpower is an urban myth.
Mm.
That was really, really powerful to me. And that procrastination is perfection in disguise. I actually wrote it on my whiteboard. I loved it so much.
Thank you. So it sounds like that phrase is something that can inform you going forward.
I think so, yeah.
That's terrific. Thank you. That's great. I know, Lauren, we'll have a big post-mortem afterwards, but I'm just curious if you want to share any takeaways.
I liked the exercise that you that you put out there with the five values and where they're showing up, that I would like to spend a little more time on that in my own head.
Terrific. That's great.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I did. I wrote that down as well.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, thank you for, what else? Anything else?
I'm just thinking, no, I thought, I agree with Jen that it had a great flow, and you went through some really powerful beliefs that people are holding, sometimes not completely consciously.
No, they're it's the collective unconscious that those beliefs permeate the collective unconscious, I think. And it's very hard to avoid them.
But by bringing them out,
you
know, they rise into our consciousness.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
And that's really important stuff.
Thank you. I think so.
Yeah.
I liked that as well because I used to write a fair amount when I was younger, and I remember I actually verbalized it at one point that I was going to slow down on my writing because I was happier, right?
Yeah.
So, like, you saying, like, you can have both, it was like, of course you can have both, you know? Like, and you're healthier for it, and you're in a better place, and you're a happier person to have the structure. The structure was really an aha moment for me as well.
Like, yeah.
I just know that I do better when I plan my days in advance. I guess I jumped on because you like advertised it to the group today, and I was like, oh, I have a little bit of time. Let's procrastinate from what I should be doing. and that was really powerful. Like, it just I didn't think that I was going to resonate as much with this as I did. I think is really the takeaway for me.
Well, that's terrific. And what would you say resonated the most?
The fact that I honestly think that anybody could consider themselves a creative.
Huh. Yeah.
I don't think that I think that we live in this world where we like to put people in boxes, right? And if you're a professional or if you've worked in business or whatever, like, I do not have your acting background or your, you know, comedic background or your performing or any of that. I was in corporate America for 18 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that all of us have that creative piece to us. Everyone resonates with music in some way on some platform, whether you write it or sing it or like to dance in your car to it or, you know, or just enjoy listening to it, right? Like, everybody has that creative thread inside of them. And I think that our society has kind of made it so that if you aren't a successful artist or if you're not an actor or you're not a well-known singer or band member or et cetera, then you're not creative. You know what I mean? Like, I think that there are some misconstrued definitions which are not necessarily valid.
No, and that can, and it can keep people from themselves.
Correct.
Yeah, I like that. Thanks. Well, I want to thank both of you for making this happen. And what else do you appreciate? I don't want to cut you off. I'm sorry, Jen.
No, I was just saying I really appreciate you doing this. This was really, really great. I'm really glad that I called in.
I'm really glad you did, too, because if both of you had not called in, this would have been a very different experience. It would have been rather flat. I don't even know if I would have done it. So thank you for making it happen. Company's stronger than will. And we created an event together. It there wouldn't have been an event. So thank you. Thank you both.
You're welcome, and thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. So, Lauren, I'll talk to you shortly. And, Jen, I'll see you around campus.
All right. I'll see you soon, honey.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.